I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday.
From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. It's going to be only America first. America first.
Today, we begin with your reactions to the extraordinary events of the inauguration weekend. The Women's March on Washington was one of nearly 700 marches that took place the day after President Trump gave an inaugural address that indicated a sharp detour from past U.S. policy. We welcome your calls and comments on the new president's first days in office and the message that the Women's Marches sent him on Saturday. Then it's the January edition of Living Questions, our monthly series that examines the role of religion in the public sphere. We'll talk about the unique dimensions of worship and religious study for people who are incarcerated. Midday starts right after the news.
What democracy looks like!
This is what democracy looks like!
Show me what democracy looks like!
This is what democracy looks like!
This is what democracy looks like!
And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Midday. Coming up later on the program, this month's installment of Living Questions, our look at the role of religion in the public sphere. But first, I want to get your reflections on the tumultuous and historic events of this past weekend. Our phone number here for you to be part of our conversation about the inauguration and the march that took place in Washington, as well as in many, many other places, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So we'd like to hear from you if you attended either the inauguration or one of the marches. Many people are already referring to the events that occurred in Washington and around the world this weekend as indicative of a massive paradigm shift, both in the policies of the United States government and in the ways opposition to those policies might be organized moving forward. So what do you think? Give me a call, 410-662-8780. Our email address again, midday@wypr.org, or you can send us a tweet, our handle @MiddayTomHall. President's election was seen as a celebration of business acumen, a triumph of populism, and a rejection of the status quo. Mr. Trump came to power with the lowest approval rating of any president in history, and his first 2.5 days in office were seen by many as a calamitous mess. He signed executive orders that have already shaken the markets for health care. He astonished some in the intelligence community by giving a self-obsessed peroration in what is considered hallowed ground at CIA headquarters. And his press secretary's debut in the White House briefing room included brazen and false claims about the size of the crowd at Friday's inauguration. Yesterday, a senior advisor, Kellyanne Conway, asserted the primacy of alternative facts. The fervor of Trump's supporters before and since the election is undeniable and unchanged. On Friday, they enthusiastically applauded the new president's brief, forceful inauguration speech in which he promised to put an end to violence in American cities, an end to the corruption that pervades politics, and an end to America's not winning on the global stage. It was a speech that was short on graciousness and long on bromides and slogans. It was rapturously received by the large crowd who braved the rain amid scattered and sometimes violent protests that took place throughout the day.
Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning, because today we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
And oh, what a difference a day makes. The dichotomy between Friday and Saturday on the Mall in Washington couldn't have been more pronounced. On Saturday, a crowd that experts estimated to be twice the size of the one that attended the inauguration gathered on the Mall in Washington to express their distaste for various parts of the perceived Trump agenda and to stake a claim as an opposition that is energized and willing to do whatever it takes to thwart Trump's initiatives.
This is the upside of the downside. This is an outpouring of energy and true democracy like I have never seen in my very long life. It is wide in age, it is deep in diversity, and remember, the Constitution does not begin with I, the President, it begins with we, the people. So don't try to divide us. Do not try to divide us. If you force Muslims to register, we will all register as Muslims.
We're taking your calls, tweets, and emails for the first few minutes of today's show. What was your reaction to President Trump's inauguration speech, and what do you think of the worldwide marches on Saturday? So if you attended either the speech or one of the marches in Baltimore, Annapolis, Frederick, or Ocean City, we'd love to hear from you. We've already got a number of callers on the line. Our phone number, 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Joining us from the offices of the Baltimore Sun on Calvert Street in downtown Baltimore is Natalie Sherman, a reporter for The Sun. Natalie, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your time.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
So you were, I guess, on a bus with some folks who were going down to Washington. What was your experience yesterday, or Saturday, rather?
Yeah, on Saturday, I got to tag along with a group of women who had sort of organized about, it was two buses, so about 110 people, including me and a Sun photographer, who went down. We left early, 7 in the morning. People set out, got split up in the crowd. I don't know how many people heard the speeches. I myself was sort of in the mass and unable to move for several hours and sort of squashed it was very squashed. And there were questions, is anybody marching? Will there be a march? Eventually, sort of there were these spontaneous marches down various streets, and then everybody headed back around 5.
And the mood going down and coming back, how would you describe it?
Well, I think going down, people were actually sort of, you know, they had seen the coverage of some of the protests on Friday at Trump's inauguration. And so there was, you know, don't let yourself be instigated. This is about, we want to be positive, et cetera. And coming back, everyone was just amazed that despite this mass of people that really overwhelmed the streets, that they're, as far as I have heard, and certainly what I saw, you know, everyone's like, oh, everybody was so polite, everybody was so well behaved, and there weren't any arrests that I'm aware of at this point. So,
yeah, I'm not aware of any arrests in Washington on Saturday either, and there were estimates that there were about 500,000 people there. It's possible that the rally that was held in Los Angeles had even more people there. I mean, those numbers are still coming in. But Natalie Sherman, did you hear from folks in terms of, on the way back, did you hear from folks with any particular, you know, strategic ideas, commitments to continuing the clearly very strong energy that was developed during the events of Saturday afternoon?
So I did spend some time asking people, you know, what do you hope this will accomplish? And everyone was like, well, today we know we want there to be numbers, but we know that won't actually do anything unless we can channel the sort of energy and into local political activism and volunteering and sort of being committed at the local level. So I think people were aware that this could just be a statement and are hoping to avoid that.
Well, Natalie Sherman, I appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks so much, and look forward to the next time you're here on Midday with us.
Thanks so much.
Joining me in the studio is WIPR's Mary Rose Madden, who was also at the march. And Mary Rose, you didn't take a bus. You got down there how?
We drove down to the Greenbelt Metro station, and we waited in line for about 3 hours to get our Metro cards and get on the train. Once we're on the train there, it wasn't too crowded, and we got into around 7th Street and, you know, picked up Constitution Avenue from there.
So you were sort of moving for most of the day? Were you stuck the way Natalie was? I heard a lot of people were kind of stuck, that there were so many people, there was such a mob that they couldn't really move.
No, we were moving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were always, besides, you know, standing in line for the Metro.
Yeah, did you have an opportunity to hear any of the speeches and any of the presentations from
the
stage?
No, we missed all the speeches, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were people upset by the fact that they couldn't hear the speeches? Was that an issue?
No. I think even waiting in line didn't upset people. It was all just the spirit of the day was just, you know, getting energized and showing some movement for this, you know, for this gigantic group of people who are protesting a lot of the policies that are proposed.
So we have some tape of an interview you did with a family, Jennifer Miller. She's 45 years old. Her husband, Ernest, is 49 years old, and their daughter, Kanyada, is 23. What can you tell us about them before we hear what they had to say on Saturday afternoon?
Well, like a lot of people I spoke to, this was their first protest. This is they're an interracial couple, and they said that, you know, within their circle of friends, they are, you know, there's a diverse group of feelings and thoughts about this president, but they were here to take a stand like so many.
All right, here's your conversation with them on Saturday.
And is there like a specific cause that brings you out here more than any other?
Just equality for everybody, you know, love for everybody, respect everybody, and that's what we're here for.
Do you have people in your life who wonder why you're out here marching?
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And what do you say?
Just we're marching for equality for all. Rights for all, you know, it's not
we
just
come
about
from a very diverse family.
Yeah.
Yes.
So to hear that one person may need to be sent home or build a wall, are you kidding me? Don't we stand for equal? That's what the United States is. We're a melting pot. You're supposed to be able to come here when there was nowhere else to go. Nothing else bigger or better for you or your family, and that's why.
Jennifer Miller, her husband Ernest, and their daughter Kenyatta speaking with Mary Rose Madden of WIPR News Department on Saturday at the march. I want to go to the phones, Mary Rose. We have a bunch of folks who want to weigh in today. Alyssa in Moncton, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hi, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I was able to attend the Baltimore vigil, and I have to say I assumed, particularly with the weather, that I would be one of, you know, maybe 50 people milling around. And the closer I got to the area where the vigil was held at 33rd and North Charles, the more I realized there was not going to even be a place for me to park. It was absolutely crowded, men, women, children, all walks of life. It was absolutely beautiful. And Marilyn Mosby's speech in particular was moving. She called on us, her warrior women. And it was just so incredible. I had to later look it up and listen to it again because it just really spoke to my heart, and I had to share it with my friends. You know, some of my friends did make it to D.C. I was not able to do so, but I was so happy to be one of the voices heard in Baltimore that day.
Yeah, and Alyssa, Lorraine Mirabella of the Baltimore Sun covered that rally over by the Baltimore Museum of Art on Saturday and estimated a crowd of about 5,000 people. When you were there, was this again a crowd that was moving around? Were they walking from and marching from one place to another? Was it pretty much a stationary event that included some speakers that most people were able to hear?
I would say most people were probably not able to hear. Unless you were close to the center of the crowd, you were not going to be able to hear the speakers. Now, there were a lot of people milling about, but this was not a march. This was a vigil, and it was planned as such. So I think most people understood that, you know, we were going to meet, you know, and stand with our signs. There were so many people there. When I realized the estimate was 5,000, I thought, okay, well, that makes sense because you really... It was absolutely packed.
Great. Well, thank you for your call, Alyssa. I appreciate it. Vera in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. I'm here with Mary Rose Madden from the WIPR News Department. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I went to Washington, and we took the Orange Line in. We drove to the end of the Orange Line and took the Orange Line in. And there were so many people, and the trains were all packed, and the stations that we passed, because the train wouldn't stop because we were packed already. The platforms were absolutely packed with people. Going there, we passed masses of buses, and the traffic was very, very heavy. At the march, which was fantastic, there was so much energy, and there were so many colors of people. The women were wonderful. The people were wonderful. There were disabled people, blind people, whatever you looked at.
Well, great. That's terrific to hear, Vera. Thank you so much for that report of your personal experience on Saturday. I appreciate the call. Mary Rose Madden, talk about the racial divide, the racial mix of the crowd that you observed going to Greenbelt and then taking the metro into town.
There was definitely a diversity in the crowd, but I would say, let's see, 3 out of 5 people were white that I saw, and all kinds of ages, families, men, women, definitely more women, but a lot more men than I, you know, than I kind of expected. I mean, some men held up signs that said men of quality support gender equality and father, feminist, husband. So, you know, there was a good mix. I mean, there was definitely less of a police presence. I think I saw one police car as opposed to other Black Lives Matter protests when you'd see, you know, a much stronger police presence.
Did folks talk about that? Because before the march, there was a lot of discussion about the racial mix and who was going to get to speak and mm-hmm. who was actually organizing it and who was taking credit for it, et cetera, et cetera. Did that come up at the event itself?
Nobody that I spoke to brought that up, but I did see a lot of discussion about that. You know, people were holding up signs, all kinds of signs, some Black Lives Matter, fight voter suppression. One man had his tax returns on a sign and said, now it's your turn, Donald. And, you know, of course, men and women were wearing pink hats with, you know, pink pussy hats. That's what they're called.
So, right. And they were made sort of en masse, and a lot of people were knitting them and getting them out there.
Right.
Janet in Southwest Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. And I just want to say a couple of things. I thought it was multi-generational, multi-racial. I saw lots of Black folks there. I happen to be African-American, and I saw a lot of white people with Black Lives Matter shirts on as well. But it was incredible. And I also want to say, I took the MART train from Penn Station all down to Union Station and then walked over. That's how, and it just spread out. It was just incredible. But the MART train folks were also very accommodating. It was just a good, jubilant feeling. And it gave me hope in America again. It really does. I've been very depressed since this. The election of what's his face, but it was a miracle. It was awesome. So
what's his face would be, of course, President Trump. And Janet, did you get a sense that this was something that was going to be sustainable? That this was an energy that was going to continue after Saturday?
Actually, on the way back on the train, we all talked about that. Sustain this. Someone even started a chant saying, keep it up, or so, I can't remember exactly what, but yes, I do believe this is going to be sustainable. People want to live in a sane democratic society. They do not want what Donald Trump is proposing.
Well, Janet, thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. You know, Mary Rose, I was at Penn Station around 6:30, I suppose, picking up a friend who actually grew up in New York and had been living in London for the past 20 years. She came back for the event, and the couple of trains that unloaded before hers, they were chanting in Penn Station in Baltimore. I mean, the, mm-hmm. the energy had not attenuated at all from D.C. They had just had an hour-long train ride,
right.
And they were still very, very excited.
Oh, yeah. I think this, I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, but it felt like, you know, these are activists that have become recent activists. You know, they're energized in a way that they're involved more in the political world than they ever have been.
Cameron in Baltimore, thanks for your call. Welcome to Midday.
Thanks for having me. I also went to the march in Washington, and the comment that I have is that I think it's very interesting that there's been so much press coverage around the march, and it's been kind of heralded as an effort of women to kind of stand up for their rights, and primarily white women, as you mentioned earlier, which is kind of who organized the march. But I think a lot of people have overlooked, especially in with the media coverage, that, you know, 53% of white women did vote for Trump. So it's been kind of interesting to see it as a movement against Trump and for women when the majority of the people who have been represented in this march actually embody kind of the opposite ideals.
And given that fact, because that is, in fact, what happened in terms of the general population in the election, do you think that the march included the progressive wing of the Democratic Party and that the white women who were at that march, in fact, voted for Trump? I mean, do you have a sense that there were Trump voters in the protest march on Saturday, or were most of those people, regardless of their race, people that had already voted for Secretary Clinton or one of the other candidates?
Yeah, I definitely don't believe that they were the Trump voters, but I think it's an interesting aspect to look at that, you know, like I said, this march was organized primarily by white women and that it's been seen as such a success. But I know in my personal circles, I've heard a lot of, but where were these women, you know, when there were issues of discrimination and violence against people in the black community? Because if you're against Trump's policies and against, you know, divisive rhetoric against women, well, what about other groups of minorities and groups that are also being targeted and, you know, kind of unjustly treated?
Well, thanks for your call, Cameron. I appreciate it. Let's try to sneak in a couple more calls before we have to take a quick break. Chelsea in Baltimore, you were in D.C. on Saturday. What was your experience? Welcome to the show.
Hi. Well, I'm glad to be on. Long, long listener. And let me tell you right now, I feel as though Saturday was one of the most empowering, best feeling days life. We were lucky enough to get very close to the stage, so we heard every speaker. And one thing that I really enjoyed about it was that all the speakers that spoke showed so many different perspectives, you know, from different nationalities and different demographics and different platforms, but they all had the same core to them, and that was, you know, the equality. And there was such a message of all the different things that we can do to make a difference and not just make this a one day, you know, event, make this real change. It felt like the beginning of something really big.
Well, thanks for your call, Chelsea. I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Mary Rose. Let me give you the last word here. Mr. Trump himself tweeted on Sunday that, you know, I thought we just had an election. Why didn't these people vote? Did you get a sense that the energy and the activism that was certainly on display was something that was, for whatever reason, sort of laid dormant during the campaign? Was this a wake-up call, the fact that the election actually happened and the result was actually what it was?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a good question. And also, I think Cameron raised a good point, too. I mean, these are people who, like I said, I think they just jumped into the pool of, you know, marching and expressing their voice in a crowd of people. And, you know, during Occupy Wall Street and the Black Lives Matter movement, where were these folks? Well, maybe this is just like the growing momentum and, you know, this is going to continue, or maybe it'll fade out. I don't know. But it would be interesting to have your listeners maybe write in and keep coming. I mean, they have such good questions and so many interesting ways of looking at this. You know, keep it going.
Well, thank you, Mary Rose Madden. I appreciate it. And we look forward to hearing more from you and from our listeners. I'm sorry I didn't get to everybody who's emailed and called. We do need to move on to our next topic today. I want to thank Natalie Sherman of the Baltimore Sun for joining us earlier. We will have more on this topic later this week here on Midday. And before we take a break, every Monday, it is our practice here on Midday to acknowledge the people who were killed in Baltimore during the previous week. We do that by reading their names to bear witness to their untimely deaths and to show solidarity with their grieving families. So far this month, this first month of the year, as of today, 20 people have been victims of a homicide in Baltimore City. The following people lost their lives to violence last week. Rashawn Fenner, age 25. Andrew Zachary, age 23. Angelo Wheeler, age 38. George Cookson, age 31. Herbert Allen, age 44. And Sean Davis, he was 34 years old. Coming up after a break, this month's installment of Living Questions, our series exploring the role of religion in the public sphere. You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.